Uh-oh. Oh, well. In the South, we can fix pretty much anything with duct tape.
Anything that is but relationships. When a marriage is broken and divorce becomes part of the story, many are left wondering if they will ever be unbroken again. I'm Kim Weir. This is the Art of Friendship podcast. You know, divorce has been a reality since the population of the world grew past one man and one woman. And it seems that every year, the number of marriage breakups increases. And 2020 was no exception. In fact, 2020 brought a 34% increase in divorce filings in America. What that means is that today, 22% of all American women have been divorced, and 21% of men. That's a quarter of the population. Okay, now let's bring that down to something that we can wrap our hands around. That means a fourth of the people that we know, a fourth of our friends have probably been through divorce. In fact, what that means is maybe that's your story. Maybe you can relate to what it's like to have brokenness in your story when it comes to what some would consider the most important relationship that you'll ever have, the marriage relationship. I wish there was a way to just snap our fingers and put all the pieces back together. But it seems like in divorce, so much is broken and there's not any simple answers. Well, today on the Art of Friendship podcast, we want to explore that. Is brokenness the end? Will you always have to live with that? Or are there ways to put the pieces back together? I want to invite a new friend into the conversation in hopes that will encourage you, not only if this is your story, but I want to encourage you if this is the story of one of the friends in your life or a family member or a sister or an aunt, maybe your own mom or your daughter. Knowing the best way to encourage them might also mean, what is it like to walk in their footsteps? Well, we have a new friend that can give us some insight on that. Tracy Miles is the speaker and an author and the director of Compel Training with Proverbs 31 Ministries. She's got four best-selling books, and her latest book, Living Unbroken, Reclaiming Your Life and Your Heart After Divorce. She uses her own experiences with divorce to help people on their journey toward not more brokenness, but wholeness. Hey, Tracy, welcome to the Art of Friendship podcast.
Hey, Kim, thanks for having me.
This story, unfortunately, kind of points to a whole epidemic that's been around for a while that often gets, I guess, not much attention because it's become so ordinary, and that's divorce. It really is epidemic when you're talking about one-fourth of the American population of adults have experienced it.
Absolutely. It's more common than we would like for it to be.
Yeah, it's interesting as I was kind of reading on some of the statistics because there's so much that's happened, so much that surged during COVID. And it wasn't surprising to me to find that divorce was one of those. But also there's been a surge in what they call gray divorce. I don't know if you've ever heard that phrase before, but it basically is divorce for people who are over the age of 40 and 50. In other words, you're kind of starting to get your gray hairs and maybe you didn't see this as part of your story. And boom, out of nowhere, it is part of your story as you're becoming an empty nester or retirement hits and people are, for many reasons, finding themselves divorced.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everyone that I talked to most recently is probably in that age group, and it's just more devastating because you've been together for so long, you've created a life and a family. But whether you've been together for 2 years and you're in your 20s or you've been together for 40 years and you're in your 60s or 70s, it's still a pretty devastating blow and a really, really hard journey to have to walk through.
It'd be so great if this story was a story for those who aren't also people of faith. In other words, you know what? They're going to church. They're doing, quote unquote, the right things. They're living according to biblical principles and bam, and divorce still winds up being their story too. And I don't know that the church has found the right way to deal with that. And so for many people of faith, that adds to their brokenness because rejection in all different quarters, senses of isolation, let's just say broken gets crushed, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah, that's one of the things when I did go through my separation and divorce, which happened very abruptly, basically overnight, because I found some evidence for reasons that the marriage could no longer be. And so it kind of just crumbled right before my eyes and life just was turned upside down instantly. And we had been going to the same church for over 20 years. And that was just not a place that I felt I could go anymore. I didn't want to go sit in a pew with you know, my children, where I had been sitting for the last 20 years with my intact family at the time. And there wasn't any kind of support groups or divorce care or anything like that, that I even knew about where to get support. So I found myself being a little bit removed from the church in that way. And that's never a good thing, because really you want to draw closer to God, which I did, but I had to do it on my own and with different avenues, because I didn't feel like I had a place there anymore.
Tell me a little bit about just your personal story, Tracy. Like, where are you from and what kind of home did you grow up in? And what was life like when you first got married? Just a little bit of your story.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in Georgia, right outside of Atlanta. My dad got transferred a lot in his job. And so we moved several places in North Carolina, but then kind of ended up in Georgia. So I pretty much grew up there and went to high school there, moved to Charlotte, North Carolina to go to college. And that's where I met my husband. And we got married here in Charlotte, had three children, were together for 25 years. And there was always a lot of underlying issues and things that we had to deal with, and a lot of forgiveness that had to happen. And then there came a time when there was a limit and a line that had been crossed. And that kind of began a whole new chapter of my life at that point.
You have grown kids. You're an empty nester. You're a working woman. You're a Christian. I mean, these are all parts of your story that define you. Would you say that every one of those parts wound up broken when your marriage also broke?
I would say so, because you really struggle with an identity crisis. I went to the doctor's office a month or two after my ex-husband had left, and basically there was no contact, and we currently have no contact at all, myself or our children. And I'm just filling out all of the forms in the doctor's office. You know, is your address correct? Is your phone number correct? Is your health situations correct? And then it got to your marital status. And I didn't fit into any of the boxes. I wasn't married. I wasn't single, although I was. I wasn't widowed, although it felt like it. I didn't fit anywhere. And I just had a full-blown identity crisis sitting in that doctor's office. And that's when it really hit me that who am I? I'm not a wife anymore, but I'm still a mom. I had been working at home, so I was really unemployed with the exception of speaking and writing. And all of my friends were still married, but I didn't go to my church. I was worried that I couldn't serve in ministry anymore, because now I'm going to have this big scarlet D on my chest because I'm divorced. And, you know, can I still work with Proverbs 31? And all of these things were just tangled up in my heart. And I really felt like brokenness was just all over me. It's kind of a pit that you get in and you almost see no way out. And then on top of worrying about who am I, you're worried about how am I going to pay the bills? How am I going to provide for my family? Where are we going to live? So it's just a huge amount of problems that I don't think people realize that haven't walked these shoes, because I've known people that walked these shoes, you know, in the past, but I had no idea what the steps were that those shoes had to go through until you're in them yourselves.
You talk about the idea of an identity crisis. You know, on this podcast, so often we talk about the importance of really knowing who we are and how difficult it is to enter into any relationship when we can't even friend ourselves, when we struggle with that sense of identity. And one thing that I think I've experienced walking through this season with friends, and like everybody, I've had very close friends who have gone through divorce, and sometimes, as you've described, shockingly unexpected divorces. One of the things that I've seen that often is consistent is that women who knew who they were, women who had a very good sense of self, spectacular idea of their position in Christ, that was shaken to the ground when divorce hit. For the woman who's listening, that this is where she's at right now, it's new enough in her experience that she can't tell up from down, and she's questioning everything about her own worth and whether she was ever good enough for anything, or God's condemnation of her in this position in her life. She's there at the beginning of where you were a few years ago. Before we go on with the conversation, how would you encourage her to listen to this conversation?
Well, one thing that I did learn is that I will never again put my value in the hands of another person. Our value is in Christ. We're told that all throughout Scripture, that we are worthy, that he sees us as beautiful, that we're made in his image, and that nothing that we do, nothing, our marital status, our jobs, ministry, nothing that we do can take away the value that he sees in us. And so we don't need to put our value and our self-worth in the hands of someone else or base it on what someone else thinks about us. Just because, divorce can make so many harsh words happen. So even the words that can be spoken can just crush your self-confidence completely. But even if there's not words, it's actions. If there was infidelity, if they chose someone over you, it goes back to what you were saying. Why was I not enough? Why? What's wrong with me? You know, and it really just makes you start doubting everything about yourself. So it's really a journey back to self-confidence and finding who you are, rediscovering your own identity, rediscovering what you love and what makes you a proud, independent woman and what you enjoy, and just really reclaiming who you are and just continuing to believe that you are a valuable, beautiful person, despite what may have happened to your marriage and despite what someone else may have said or done.
I'm really struck by the fact that you use the word journey. If anybody's ever gone on a road trip, you know that it is, you know, it's several stages and several steps. There's the thinking about it, the planning, the making the commitment, the packing the bags, packing the car, you know, charting the course, going on the journey. I mean, there's all this that's involved anytime you go on a journey. And for you to describe this process of moving toward wholeness in divorce as a journey is striking to me. To the person who knows someone, who loves someone who is going through divorce, but has been stymied by lack of understanding, lack of wisdom about what they should do next, how they should support and encourage, maybe even frustration at the divorce itself. It's so easy to make a judgment about what someone else will do from the outside. Mm-hmm. Just like sometimes we can look at somebody's broken relationship and say, well, I'd leave that guy in a heartbeat. I think we do have a tendency to also look at marriages and go, but did you try everything? Have you done, you know, to be able to sort of, even if we don't say it, think it. For the person who loves someone who's going through this process, but cannot possibly know exactly what they've experienced, how would you like them to listen to the rest of our conversation today?
I would like for them to listen to, I guess, just really what it's like to walk in those shoes, as we've mentioned, because some of the things that you just said, people have said, you know, would say to me, but what people don't realize is that you do not know what goes on behind closed doors. It doesn't matter how well you know someone, you don't know what's happened behind closed doors. And regardless of the things that may have happened, how justified a separation may be or what have you, that person may not be willing to share those details. So you're making judgments based on information that you don't know. And the last thing that people need to hear is, did you try harder? Or maybe you should try this, or give him another chance, or I think he's great, or, you know, that type of thing. I even had friends say to me, well, you know, I can't really hang out with single friends. So if you're single, then I can't be your friend anymore. And I'll never forget that, because I just thought, you don't realize how hurtful that is, because when you're walking through this, the things you need the most is your friends. You need people who are going to support you and love you and not judge you for whether you're making the right decision or not. You know, it's not their life. So you have to just love the people and support them and encourage them and guide them as best you can, but still try not to say and do things that are going to hurt them or coerce them into something that may not be right for them, because you may not have all the information.
I do believe that how to get through divorce books should be read by people who are not divorced.
I do too.
Written by people who are, to give some insights and understanding, to hear the things their friends won't tell them, because it's painful and it's embarrassing and it's hurtful, and they're still on the journey and they're in the process. So to be able to get that information from somebody who's further down the road, but who's willing to say, let me tell you as it is, I'll be honest and transparent, and know that if I'm feeling this way, probably your friend who's going through divorce is feeling this way. Listen to what I'm saying and learn something. So there's my two cents.
I think another thing too is it's easy for people to distance themselves simply because they don't want to say anything wrong. and they don't know what to say at all, or they just think maybe they just want to be left alone, or they don't really want to talk about their feelings. But that's probably the worst thing that you can do, because even on those days when the last thing in the world I wanted to do was get out and go somewhere, that is the day that I probably needed to get out and go somewhere the most. So the worst thing is to try to make that person feel like you've cut them off, when in your heart, you may be thinking, I'm just giving them their space and some time. But really what they need is love and support, and to know that they're still going to be included and loved, even if their marital status has changed or they're going through a hard time.
Yeah. What would you have done with them if they hadn't gotten divorced? Other than a couple things, what would you have done? Go do that. Yeah. Go do that. They're still the same person. So good wisdom. Let's talk about some of the journey. Another word for that I know is process. And I'd love to hear a little bit about your own experience and what you learned. And as you sort of worked through this now, I know you've done a lot of research to help sort of ground you in how this process that you went through is actually a forward motion toward healing. What does it look like to begin the journey? And are there things that somebody who has just gone through the brokenness can expect? I mean, it's sort of like, you know, when you're head from here to California, you're going to pass this million mark and you're going to pass that one. And everybody who goes is going to pass the same thing. Is that also a reality when it comes to working your way through the process of becoming divorced?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I realized, and I mentioned earlier, that I don't really have any contact at all with my ex-husband, and he doesn't have much contact with the children either, is that I pretty much discovered what it means to really mourn the death of the living, because it's you're mourning the death of not only someone that's still here on earth, they're just not in your life, but you're mourning the death of the life that you once knew, the future that you had always imagined on having, the financial status that you had, maybe the wedding ring that you wore every day, the picture of your family, the vacations that you had, the joint friends that you had, the couple's friends. There's so many things that you're mourning the death of. And so the death of a marriage is really the death of so many things. And so one of the things that I learned and also did a lot of research on, which was actually helpful in my own healing process, is the stages of grief. And I talk about in Living Unbroken the stages of grief that everyone goes through, and you can go through them at different times. Everyone doesn't go through it at the same time. It just depends on your situation, but those include, you know, denial and anger, and then bargaining, depression, and then at some point you get to acceptance. And you could vacillate between those five all the time. Like, you could start out being in denial. That's kind of where I was. And then I'm like, all of a sudden, no, I'm so mad. I can't believe you did this to me. I can't believe you did all these things. And just, how dare you? And then I go back to, oh, but wait, let's fix this. And then you're bargaining with God. And maybe if I changed, or maybe, you know, and there's all these bargaining that may not even be good if you got your way, but we go back and forth through these things. And it's just all of the emotions that you have are so overwhelming. It makes you start feeling like you are straight up crazy, straight up crazy. And so I actually, in the book too, talk about that. Girl, you are not crazy, because there's so many emotions that you have to process. And it takes time. It takes many, many months. But just recognizing that it's okay for me to be in denial. It's okay for me to be mad. Mad at my spouse, mad at God, mad at myself, mad at the situation, mad at another person or whatever, mad at it. Just, it's okay to have all of these feelings. We don't want to let them grip our hearts, and we don't want to get stuck in those. And we want to gradually learn to forgive and ask for God's peace and get to the stage of acceptance where we can really say, okay, well, this is not what I wanted. This is not the life that I planned on, but this is the life that I have right now. And this is where God has me. I've got a lot of life to live. I've got a lot of blessings, and I'm going to make the best of it, and I will survive. And that's been eye-opening to me, just to realize that God does not leave us. A spouse may leave us. We may leave our spouse. It may be our decision to leave. The same guilt and the same emotions are still going to come about. And it's okay to have those emotions, but everybody will go through those stages of grief in some way, shape, or form, whether they're minor or overwhelming. And it's really interesting to me how grief plays into this concept of separation and divorce. And it's not only for the loss of someone that actually passes away.
When you talk about the stages of grief, just for you personally, Tracy, I'm curious, was there one of those that got your feet stuck a little bit more than the other that was harder for you to move through and wrestle with acceptance?
I think probably the depression stage. And I've never experienced depression in my life because it's very, very difficult to actually wrap your mind around the fact that this person that you've been with for, we had been together for 30 years, including the time that we had dated, is no longer going to be in my life. Not that that person was always good for me, not that everything was always perfect and wonderful, but, you know, how can this happen? And how can someone just walk away from their family and their life? And there was a huge, just insurmountable amount of financial issues that I didn't know about at the time, but that kept coming to light and were just beyond understandable. And even 5 years later, to this actual today, as we're talking, there is a situation that I'm still dealing with that are consequences of things that were done that I didn't know prior to us separating. So the depression stage was really hard. I actually never understood that you could sit in the bed or lay in the bed for 5 or 6 days straight and not get out in the dark and cry. I didn't really understand that. So I really have a newfound empathy and compassion for people who struggle with that a lot. But I've also learned that there are doctors and there's medication and that they are valuable. And we should not be ashamed or think that's a stigma to use those, you know, those resources when we need them.
I just want to commend you for being so transparent. It's hard. It doesn't matter if we've gone past something and we've healed from it or we've reconciled. It's still hard to let people see. It almost brings me to tears thinking about it, to let people see that vulnerable place in us that surprised even us. And so for all of those who are listening, who are struggling to even say it to themselves, that this could be where they are right now, Tracy, thank you for just letting us have that little window. You mentioned doctors and medication. I'm just curious your own thoughts. You're not a, let me qualify this. This is not a medical show and we are not giving advice.
But, I am not a doctor.
But when it comes to things like personal counseling, possibly dealing with some of the emotional trauma, if you see that it is moving into systemic issues with depression or anxiety, at what point would you say to somebody, consider talking with a professional?
Well, again, I'm not a doctor, so I'm not sure of the exact timeline. So I don't want to set myself up for saying something really incorrect, but I do think it varies from person to person. But I would say if you have gone for quite some time, weeks, maybe months, and other people are starting to get concerned about you because they see the change in you, you're not wanting to eat, you're not taking care of yourself, you don't want to leave the house, it's hard to get out of bed, because I know it was like, I was like, why get out of bed? I've got an empty house, I've got an empty nest, you know, I'm reaching menopause, I'm turning 50. Like I had all of these things that were so terrible and I had no idea what the future held. And I just, everything just seemed to be so doom and gloom. And I just couldn't shake, you know, being just abandoned and left behind and accept the reality of what was happening. And I was just so sad. And I did take medication for a number of months. And then I kind of weaned myself off of that. I didn't take a lot of counseling simply because I didn't have the money to afford that. And all of our insurance policies had gotten canceled. So that wasn't an option. So one of the things that really helped me just, and everyone's different, like I said, was journaling. I started keeping a journal and I've never journaled in my life, not a journaler, but I started keeping it and it has become the best thing that I ever did. And I actually have used so much of what I wrote in my journal in my last three books. Writing and journaling became part of my healing process because it was just a safe place between me and God. And I could pour out everything because I'm not one of these people. You wouldn't think so because I'm so transparent in writing in my books or sharing anything online. But I'm not one of these people that will just pour my heart out and come tell you everything, even to my own mom. She's like, why don't you just open up and talk to me? And I'm like, I'm fine. I'll just manage things and kind of hold it all in and not tell everyone. But being able to just get everything out in the open, every detail that I wouldn't share with anyone else. Everyone doesn't need to know all the details of your life, nor do they want to. But there's just anything that's going to help you walk through your healing, that's what you should do. Whether it's medication, therapy, face-to-face support groups, divorce care groups, going out and doing new hobbies, doing the journaling, getting in a Bible study, just having that one friend, that one accountability partner, whatever it may be to help you cope, then that's what you should do for yourself and your family and the people that love you.
One of the things that is a consequence of any trauma can always be loneliness, because what happens is whenever we go through something traumatic, we pull in and begin to internalize things on our own. Let's talk a little bit about loneliness going through a divorce that is falling, a marriage that is falling apart, both from the perspective of where you are and what you can do, and also from the perspective of those that are in your orbit, speaking to the people who, it's like you have this divorce friend, you've been giving them space, now you haven't seen them in a long time. So what are some of the significant issues of loneliness that not necessarily were unique to you, but that you have found are struggles for many people going through broken marriages?
I think for more than anything, it's the estrangement of being with other couples. Not only do you not feel like you belong, but they are uncomfortable about making you feel like you don't belong, even if they invite you. And it's hard also because if you shared friends, then who gets to keep the friends? And it's hard for your friends to take sides. So that's another reason sometimes there is that distance, because they don't want to take sides. So, you know, they just cut off contact altogether. But I think people don't realize how hurtful that is, because it does cause that true feeling of isolation. You've already been abandoned by your spouse, or you've left your spouse and caused your own, you know, self to have to be by yourself. But it's just not good, because you have way too much time to swim around in this cesspool of emotions, and it's not good for your mental health or your physical health. So it's so important to force yourself to get out of your comfort zone and to call someone and say, I just need to get out of the house, or can you come over for dinner, or come over and have a glass of wine, or, you know, whatever it may be. Just go to the mall, go walk around, go to the park, do something to be outside of your home, because the longer that you sit inside, the deeper and deeper the depression or the feeling of isolation or the hesitation to move forward.
Okay. So this is going to sound, I think just even using this word is going to sound insensitive. I just am thinking about my own experience and how easy I fall into this. Self-absorption. I mean, when we go through particularly something that's hard, anybody that's a parent knows that when your kid goes through trauma, either as a prodigal or just a hard thing or whatever, you pull in, everything turns inward, and it all becomes about that thing. It can happen while you're in a marriage. So I'm assuming that if it can happen in all those places, that it can also happen that we can become very self-absorbed when we go through the breakup of a marriage. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? What was that like for you? And how were you able to move out of that very myopic view of life?
Well, my son was still in high school at the time. And so my girls were in college. And admittedly, I would talk to them too much. And I realize that because we're still very close to this day. They're you know, all 5 years older now, but we're all very close, very good friends. And as I look back, I realize that I had to tell them details because they were too old to say mommy and daddy just didn't get along, or, you know, they just weren't at the ages to where you could kind of push things under the rug anymore. And there was just too much that was going on that impacted the entire family. So I talked to them a lot. And I didn't try to cry in front of them a lot. I tried not to, but, you know, it would happen. I was very emotionally unstable. But one day, one of my daughters, I don't remember what we were talking about, but she said, Mom, I think you forget that you're not the only one going through this. And so as a mom, that's kind of hard to confess. But I think it's a great example of what you just said, as we get so caught up in our feelings that it's hard for us to think outside of our own head. But it was eye-opening for me. And she didn't say it in a mean way. And one of the things that was so upsetting for me is worrying about how my children were coping and how they were feeling. But I was also so caught up in the emotion And I was the one that was bearing the burden of how to provide and dealing with all the finances and, you know, all of that too. So I had that extra burden, but it was just kind of that extra little push that I need to be with my people and I need other support outside of just my little inner circle here at my house. And so I think that was a good time stamp for me to say it's healthier for me and it's going to be healthier for those that love me to do things that are healthy for my mental state and to talk to other people in a way that I can share and get their support, but I'm not dumping, you know, information. And it doesn't have to always be in the conversation. I just want to go out and talk about what's the weather like. It's actually a pleasure not to have to talk about, you know, what you're going through.
Yeah. You know, there's two sides of that. I think when we isolate, we become our own little echo chamber. Mm-hmm. You know, I always say I am great about giving advice to other people, but I suck at giving advice to myself because me, myself, and I will agree with the first thing I say. And that's really the right thing. And so to get outside in the context of your struggle, to let other people in, trusted people, people that you've built trust with, to let them speak into it and let them just hear you. Mm-hmm. I just need somebody to hear me.
Right.
Because I don't know if what I'm saying is crazy or if what I'm saying is sound, but I think if I could say it out loud and have it bounce off of you and I could see it in your face, that would be helpful to me. But then the other side that I hear you saying that's so important is just being out and being in relationship and asking your friend what's going on in her life.
Right.
You know, and then it's not, the world has not begun all of a sudden to orbit around my pain. My pain is there, but guess what? Life is going on for other people. And a sure way to lose our relationships is to stop investing in them. And while certainly going through traumatic events causes us to pull back some, God is so good. He will take the very thing that you think you don't have time for. I can't give any emotional energy to my friend and her drama and, you know, the thing that she's going through. And yet here's the thing, because of the way God's economy works, when we bear one another's burdens, it feeds into the satisfaction of the purpose that we're created for, that actually good things happen in us. Right. And so you can't explain the upside down nature of God's world except for to put it into practice. And he's so kind that he never says, build yourself a silo and sit and whine and cry when you're upset. But he will say, go let somebody bear your burden with you. Mm-hmm. That's the way to move forward. And go bear somebody else's burden. And so I hear that principle wrapped up in all of the things that you've been sharing. You know, at the end of the day, Tracy, a divorce that does not at some point reconcile, that it is just divorce. That is the end of that journey of that marriage. What it does is it leaves you in singleness. And for a lot of people that haven't been there in a while and don't know what to do with that, and don't know what to do with it, with the baggage of actually carrying now divorce as part of their story, how do they enter into singleness and make the most of it? What did that look like for you? And how can you encourage those who are, this is their new reality?
Well, one of the things I did is I'm very, very blessed because I've been a member of a club where I've played tennis for years. And so I've had a really good group of girlfriends. Some of those, as I just mentioned, one of the ones that said, I can't be friends with people that are single because, you know, for this stereotype reason. But I've been very blessed with a group of friends and women that are just have stuck by me through thick and thin. So I've spent a lot of time with them. They would try to get me out of the house. I've picked up new hobbies. I started playing golf. And I also looked up just social activities at meetup.com. Most cities have that. Very out of my comfort zone just to show up at a social event where I know no one. But I pretty much forced myself to go out there and actually made some new friends. We got the phone numbers. Then we would go hang out on the weekends sometimes. And I just tried to start picking up new things and pushing myself out of my comfort zone and continuing to do ministry just as I had done. And over time, things just do kind of fall into place and they get easier. And you continue to see God working. You start feeling like yourself again. Your joy will come back. You see God providing in ways that you can't even comprehend. And that just makes you think. I remember telling my kids one day, I'm like, look at this way that God just provided them this miraculous financial provision that was just so out of the blue. And I can't even, it was just so amazing. And we all got really excited. And I said, I'm so excited, like literal excitement, that I can't even wait to see what God does next. It's just going to be so much fun. But you just start to look at life in a different perspective over time. And so that's probably my biggest encouragement that I want women to know, and men, is because I hear from a lot of men that, you know, will also say, you know, this happened with my wife and I'm just devastated. I don't know where to go from here. They can share the same feelings that we've been talking about today, that life can be good again. And I had a divine encounter with God one day driving down the road. And I was just crying and I was upset. And I'm like, I felt like this was the end of life. What am I supposed to be doing? And I distinctly, as if he were sitting in the passenger seat in my car, he said, the end of your marriage is not the end of you. And it just really kind of flipped a switch in me that you're right. I am still me. I am just a different version of me in a different chapter of life. And so I can either wallow in what's happened and, you know, doom and gloom about the past, or I can just embrace where I am, focus on my blessings, do new things, reinvent myself, reinvent my life, and move forward. We know we have two choices. That's it. We get stuck in the past, stuck in our emotions, or we allow ourselves to heal, but over time, you know, make the decision that I will be okay. And it's going to be okay. And then I'm not the first one to go through this, and I'm not alone. And having other people, this was something I was going to mention earlier. I think it's important to talk to other people, have other friends who are or have been down the same road, because they understand and they get you. And so it's not like you're trying to get comfort or solace from someone that's just doesn't really grasp everything that you might be telling them. So having friends that you can kind of share experiences with is always helpful also.
Last question. Spiritually speaking, where has your journey with God gone through the healing process? You know, I think so many people know someone who seems to have this on fire, close relationship with God, and then a hard situation hits and they never see them again in fellowship, in community, at church. Their relationship was tested and they walked away. That time's going to come to all of us. It's going to look different. The hardship's going to look different. But, you know, don't be surprised when you encounter trials. That's what God's word says. I mean, this is part of life.
Right.
So for you, spiritually speaking, what does that look like for you now in your relationship compared to what it looked like before you started this particular journey?
Well, when it first started, and I've been serving in ministry for over 20 years, actually, I guess now, and God is the main thing that got me through. I mean, literally the only thing that got me through. And writing the books in the midst of the most devastating season of my life, literally wrote 3 books. I have no idea how, all by the grace of God during the first few years. That my faith is really what got me through. But I'm not going to deny that there have been times that I have made mistakes. And I have a number of stories in Living Unbroken of other women that say that same thing. They're like, well, you know, now I'm single and I'm going to go, you know, live my life. And, you know, God didn't protect me and maybe I'm going to walk away. But then the victorious part of those stories is, you know, God doesn't ever leave us, even if we walk away from him. So I loved how they were so vulnerable and transparent and saying, yeah, I messed up and I didn't make my faith a priority. And I'm still not living exactly maybe as I should, but I know where God wants me to be. I know God loves me and I'm going to lean on him and I'm walking back in the right direction. So I think we need to give ourselves a little bit of grace, just really stay grounded in our faith, but don't beat ourselves up when we stumble.
Amen to that in every area of life. That'll preach all day long to every single person. Tracy, thank you for sharing time with us today, for being honest and letting us into both the victorious and the messy places of your story and your life. I appreciate it. It's what friendship is. You've extended some friendship to us today. So thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Guys, the book that Tracy has chronicled her story in, and also encouragement for you in your story, is called Living Unbroken, Reclaiming Your Life and Your Heart After Divorce. I love that she sums it up this way. Your marriage may have ended, but your life has not. And if you don't believe that yet, then let me encourage you to pick up Tracy's book, Living Unbroken, because that can be your story too. Divorce might be your story, but that can also be your story. So I hope that you will follow up with Tracy. Tracy, how else can they find you?
They can find me at tracymiles.com. And also on all the social media outlets. And the book is releasing on February 1st. So if you order it by February 1st, but also I'm extending this on into March, but I have 5 free gifts. I've got a battle plan workbook, which is a lot of activities to help women just process their thoughts and really unearth all those emotions and things. It's a really, really helpful resource. And a companion journal that goes along with the book. I've got a beautiful print my mom painted. She's an amazing artist. And I've got it printed and framed in my home and just a couple other things. And so some really fun gifts that you get free with purchase. And anywhere on social media, you can find me and find the link, all those links to get those things.
Okay. TracyMiles.com. Again, the book is Living Unbroken. Thanks, Tracy.
Thank you.
All right, guys, for our friend foray this week, this is a simple one. If you are going through the process of divorce, if you have a relationship that is broken, then here's what I want you to do. Find one trusted person to share your life with, to let them in, to be honest with. Might be hard. Think about it. Pray about it. Who might that be? And if you're not, here is your foray. Find somebody that you know that's going through the brokenness of marriage right now. And enter into it. Love them. Take them for coffee. Laugh with them. Cry with them. Mostly listen to them and be present. Don't worry about being uncomfortable. As Tracy has told us, nobody's looking for us to fix it, but they do need us to be there. That is powerful. How could you be there for someone this week that this is part of their story? All right. As we wind up, let me remind you, don't forget to go to hopeondemand.com. We'd love to have you read along with our everyday Bible blog. Last year, it was through the entire Bible. This year, it is 52 weeks in His image. I'm writing through the 52 attributes of God, one featured each week. And I'd love for you to join us in that. You can subscribe at hopeondemand.com, and it'll come to your email box every single day. And don't forget to share this podcast with a friend. We'd love to build our community so that we're all friending with purpose together. Until next time, this is Kim Weir in the Art of Friendship podcast. Keep friending with purpose.